Hello, welcome to the Henchman's Lounge podcast number 5. This is Captain Frugal.
And I'm Henchman number 1.
And we are coming from the new Henchman's Lair, because if you notice, it's been a while from our last podcast. Well, I think you know why if you listen to it, since the lounge got raided by the Punisher.
Yes, I've got a cool new cybernetic arm, though, so it's all good, because I can now lift those heavy 55-gallon drums of toxic goo and not have to worry about it.
And my jaw now feels much better after a month.
Yes, it's looking very steely.
All right, as we'll go over, we got some great defenses. We got laser guns to protect the door, video camera surveillance. We're really stepping it up this time.
We even got a security guy named Bill.
And a teleporter to get the hell out of here if something happens again.
Indeed, which we borrowed from the Fantastic Four. We'll talk about later.
Yeah. Well, or we can talk about it. Speaking about Fantastic Four, have you seen the Fantastic Four movie, the new one?
I have not. I've heard nothing but bad things about it.
And same here. Which leads us to, has anybody watched the Fantastic Four? If you look at the sales, or the ticket sales, it doesn't look like it.
No, but the movie reviewers I've watched online have all panned it and said it's horrible and it's awful. We can only hope that... you know, Fox is tired of the Fantastic Four. We'll give it back to Marvel.
I don't want to sit there and pounce on a movie that I haven't seen. I don't think that's fair. But to be honest, from everything I've seen for the previews and everything else, didn't make me want to see it.
No, I mean, I don't know what happened to Doctor Doom, but something bad happened to Doctor Doom. I mean, he was an angry blogger that had some crazy thing happen to him.
You know, I seen the other two, the other three Fantastic Four movies, the B-movie even, and I actually enjoyed them. A lot of people panned them, but you know, I think they got one thing right. They're a family, and that's the core right there. They stray too much from that, I think, is a mistake.
Yeah, I watched the two previous, what was the Rise of the Silver Surfer and the first Fantastic Four, the Rise of the guy who will play Captain America later on, or whatever it was called. But anyway, I didn't hate them. I liked them. They really jumped the shark there with the Rise of the Silver Surfer, who's one of my favorite comic characters is the Silver Surfer, and they really blew it.
I will say that he looked cool, though.
He did look very cool. And it had Galactus as a cloud, which just was not threatening. And later on, you had the Green Lantern movie, which had, Parallax as a cloud. Movie people have to realize clouds are not threatening and scary to people.
No. I had the same issue with the first Hulk movie.
Right, and like the original, the first Star Trek movie, they go into a cloud. Mm-hmm. Clouds are not scary. I mean, if you're over the age of 6, clouds are not scary.
All right, well, the next one we hop into is comic book reviews. I'll let you head that one up.
Yes, I've had some time to actually go over a few things since with the old lounge got destroyed. And while we're in the process of building the new lounge, I picked up a copy of Weird World number 3. And I can say that overall, I think it was conceptually, I like the concept. I think we talked about Christor and Warbo were in it. Well, they are, and Archon just leaves them behind in the dust, and he ends up wandering around, goes to a bar in the middle of God knows where in the middle of Weird World, and bumps into a guy who was sent by the Enchantress, by Morgan Le Fay, to go after him, and then kill him off, and they fight and tussle, and he falls through some... crazy swamp-like thing, and it ends with a hint that you're going to see the tribe of man-things. So I can't wait to read the fourth one. Overall, I thought story was okay. The artwork was, C-minus artwork. It's quick and lazy Photoshop. I've heard that Marvel's going to continue the Weird World series after they're done with all the Secret Wars stuff, and that would be good if they do that.
I'll believe it when I see it, because if you look at the sales, they're not promising.
No, but, if they try something different, at least I'll reward them and go pick up the copy. I just hope they get a better artist to draw on it, somebody who's actually going to take it a little serious. Because when you're doing something weird like that, like some fantasy or weird kind of thing, you really, I think, need better artwork for that.
I do like the part where, first, the part I didn't care for is, it's like, come on, you had these great characters introduced last issue, and you think you're going to get more, but they split ways. So there goes Warbo, but maybe they'll meet up again. But I did like the part where they're in the bar talking, you know, and you're like, oh crap, crap's gonna go down.
Yeah. I said to go kill a guy. Yeah, funny. Wait, that's me. And then they break out fighting.
I mean, it was obvious you're seeing it happen, but it was cool nonetheless.
Right.
And now for our new segment, Flashbacks from the Staff.
And I also, when the New 52 came out, one of the books I picked up was the All-Star Western, because I just thought, you know, I don't know much about Westerns. I'm not really into Westerns. I picked it up on a lark, and I liked it. You know, it follows, like, it's created by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray. And, you got Jonah Hex and Amadeus Arkham. I think that's what intrigued me more than anything is that Amadeus Arkham, the guy who eventually creates Arkham Asylum in Batman.
Hmm. And Jonah Hex, great movie.
I haven't seen the movie.
Oh, I was joking.
I don't know if he has that horrible scar. I'm not sure how he got the horrible scar. It's really an unfortunate scar.
It was an unfortunate movie.
That's what I heard. Anyway, so the overall, it's, not bad. It ties in with the Night of the Owls, which is like a Batman tie-in, which just ties in with Batman, Detective Comics, Batgirl, Nightwing, they all had a tie-in. So, here you have the old Wild West, like the 1880s, 1890s. You've got the Owls, the Court of Owls and how they're forming way back then. So
that's
kinda
cool.
Kind of cool in that way. And at the end of the story of each comic, there's a little sub-story that has like other side characters and stuff. So in All-Star Western, you have like the tales of Nighthawk and Cinnamon. And Nighthawk is sort of a, kind of a Lone Ranger-ish, like Lone Ranger meets Zorro, kind of a superhero kind of guy. He's dressed all in black with a big white hawk on his chest.
Reminds me of Nightwing.
Kind of Nightwing-ish, I guess, but he's got six guns instead of like bull whips or swords or anything of that. And he's teamed up with a feisty butt-kicking, redhead named Cinnamon.
Mm, tasty.
And, a side note, I have a weird little mini comic that I got, talks about Hawkman. So apparently, in that book, it says that the spirit of Hawkman and Hawkgirl originally were in Nighthawk and Cinnamon.
Really?
Like, whoever they were eternally, because I guess back in ancient Egypt when they were lovers and somebody died or something like that, the spirits transferred into the future, and two of those characters were Nighthawk and Cinnamon. I have no idea if that's still relevant or true or not. But there was another one I thought was kind of neat, and it was a little small story involving a character called Dr. 13, and it reminded me kind of the Johnny Depp character in Sleepy Hollow, where he's kind of a man of science, but although this guy's not goofy, it was kind of steampunkish. The man was a man of science, and there's like a weird ghostly, not headless horseman, but like a jack-o'-lantern-headed guy robbing people on the streets, and he solves the crime. So overall, I think that All-Star Western Volume 2 was all right. I'll pick up number 3, because I saw some of the artwork in there I thought was kind of cool. You keep going on. I picked up the Starman Omnibus number 6, titled The Grand Guignol. Excuse my French, but that's what it's called. Anyway, The Grand Guignol is the final omnibus of the Starman stories, and I was really into it. I mean, it's written by James Robinson and illustrated by Peter Snaberg, if I pronounce his name right. I have to say, I was hooked in this book. I mean, it was Watchmen level good. It was as good as The Watchmen.
Wow.
I highly recommend that anybody go pick that up.
That's pretty high views there.
That is. And I was surprised by it. I just thought, oh, whatever, because I've heard good things about it. And I thought I picked up the first book, but it was the sixth one. And I did a little homework. It turns out The Grand Guignol was some kind of weird, gothic, dark puppet show kind of thing in France, like in the 1880s, early 1890s sort of thing. And it would be like, people would like kill people and murder people. And it made me think of, what was the Interview with a Vampire movie where they had the theater desk vampires? Mm-hmm. It was like that.
Oh.
So they'd have puppets and things like that. And yeah, they would allegedly kill people. You can't see the air quotes over the radio or podcast. But that carried on, I guess, until the 1960s and then it went out of business. Kind of a neat concept that there's like this dark, creepy, gothic theater.
Which we haven't had much of the horror, creepy kind of things for years.
Right, and there's not a lot of that really in this story. There's like a shadow character who hides and blends into the shadows. And there's another Starman character who was one of the original Justice Society members. And it's sort of fun because it's almost like the old Justice Society, which is makes me think of the Watchmen, I guess. Because it looks like the Watchmen was sort of based on some old characters. Actually, they were Charlton characters, but it had that old feel to it. It was something a little different.
You know, you bring up that, the old feel and things. You know what I miss is the old Dracula not the new douchey remake version of Marvel Dracula, but the old Dracula.
Dracula.
Yeah, I mean, he was a bad dude in those.
Yeah, that was an awesome series. That's where you got Blade, I think, was introduced in that.
I believe so.
And it was illustrated by Gene Colan, which artwork is awesome in that.
Let's see, that'd be Blade in the green suit. That looked like a Falcon suit, I think.
yeah.
I recall.
Yeah, he was still half vampire, half human. But he wasn't like all dressed in black with the shades and stuff like that. I think he did have sunglasses, but it was the 70s.
Yeah.
So there's that. So speaking of Gene Colan, he's one of the guys who invented the original Guardians of the Galaxy. The Guardians of the Galaxy, the original Guardians of the Galaxy. And it was a trade paperback, Tomorrow's Avengers.
Now the Guardians of the Galaxy's cartoon series starts later this month, doesn't it?
It may. I don't know.
Yes, starting September 26th.
But the original Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, featured characters named Starhawk, Martin X, Vance Astro, Yondu, and Charlie 27. And I just was sitting there going, Martin X, it sounds like a household cleaner. You know, he's like a crystal guy. So I was like, make your dishes crystal clear. Use Martin X.
We asked Maureen Waldron why she now uses household cleaner.
There is a big difference. I don't have time to put into rinsing my house. I didn't have to rinse it off. It's just a smooth, clean feeling. So if I can cut out 20 minutes, then that's an additional 20 minutes I can spend with my baby.
And it also has a character Yondu in it. And Yondu is kind of a blue guy with this weird red fin. And he's in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. He's the dirty sleazebag character who runs the ship. And he's bullying Star-Lord around. You can see he's got kind of the red mohawk. Well, that mohawk would have been a big giant fin. It's a hint back and a nod back to the comics. Overall, I think they're not bad comics. The concept I think I like. There's some weird heavy-handedness about how certain environmental problems of the 70s will destroy the world, and things later in the 31st century will be different because of it. It's bad science fiction, I would say, in that end, because it's taking something that isn't necessarily that big of a threat and then blowing it way out of proportion and creating a, people had household robots. The Zoombot took over, and once it got sentience, it took over the world. But anyway, in the 31st century, apparently there's problems, and these five guys are kind of renegades because the Earth is taken over by an alien race called the Badoon. And in the first comic story that's in there, it has the Thing and Captain America team up to go fight the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, cool.
And the Thing keeps calling them baboons instead of the Badoon. And it's just kind of funny. The Thing must have been a really popular character in the 70s because he's got team-ups with everybody, so did Spider-Man.
They did a lot of, well, they were trying to pump up the character to make him his own book. They teamed him up a lot and then launched his own series, and it just couldn't make it.
Yeah, and it makes me think a little bit with the Fantastic Fours is, I guess, I don't know what's going on with the new Secret Wars, but I don't know what's happening to Reed Richards or Sue Storm. I guess they're going to go the way of the dinosaur. It looks like the Thing is going to become a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, I think what they're doing is they're splitting them up because they don't want to, you know, they're not going to admit it. They don't want to support Fox and the movie.
Right.
But yet, they're saying, well, we're still using these characters. It's really, you know, there's no Fantastic Four book as far as we know, and they're putting them in different books. Come on, I mean, really. I think we know what's going on here.
Yeah, they're breaking it up so they can screw Fox over. Okay, I see why. I understand. Hopefully they get the movie rights back to the Fantastic Four so we can have a real Galactus show up and try to eat the Earth or something. For the real Silver Surfer.
I would hope so, but, you know, it's still, who knows what they're going to try to pull off. They want to hold that property. Of course they're going to say they're not going to let go of that property, you know, and stuff. Because if they said, well, we're going to sell it off, where's their bargaining? You know, they don't want to do that. They would rather sell that a high point or try to pump it up like they still want the property.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I read just one issue. I've been reading a lot of issues due to my friends pointing them out to me, so I had to pick them all up, is the Robin series. I went right back and to the, for example, the 1991 Robin miniseries and Robin 2 and then Robin 3, which was, I think, in 1992, which spurred then the Robin series on his own, which went 185 issues. A lot of people don't give enough credit.
Which Robins were those?
But it was Tim Drake.
This was
Tim Drake, Robin, well, almost all Tim Drake. There was like a couple issues where Spoiler becomes Robin, but that was very short period because Robin quit. The first like 100 issues were done by Chuck Dixon, like, the best part of the run in my opinion. The majority of it's a hit. You know, it's interesting him fighting lower street level criminals because first of all, at the time he's only like 15 years old. So he's, you know, but he still tackled some heavy hitters once in a while. So through most of Dixon's run was pretty solid. I think it had a couple dips, but it hit a lot of tough issues and things like that, like teenagers and sex and guns and things like that. And I think it was handled very well.
Yep.
And then it went on after that, got a little bit more mystical, a little more sci-fi. I didn't care for those parts as much, but then grounded back once in a while. Even with that, after the Dixon era, it had a lot of really good stuff. I'm not quite through the whole thing. It's 185 issues, but I'm a pretty good chunk through it. You know, it's definitely something, if you could pick up cheap, I'd recommend it. It's a good read.
Which versions of Robin were those?
Tim Drake,
and that was volume 3?
Well, actually, it's the first volume of Robin. It's just they did miniseries first, which I think is the better way to do. Launch miniseries. If they get a good sales, then give you, a full run, rather than keep saying, we're putting out a series. We intended it to be a miniseries. You know, that I think that's backwards.
Yep.
And so it had a good run, and I applaud them for it. I missed that book and that character, which is now Batman Beyond, which I'm not a big fan of that part of it. I mean, I like Batman Beyond, but making him Batman. All right. So that was the flashback from the stash. Now, how about the Batman the Killing Joke? Have you read that by any chance?
Yes, I have. I got the original first one on sale.
Yeah. The reason I mentioned that is there's a lot of talk about that becoming an animated movie, which has spurned some, oh, no, we shouldn't do that. All that, a little bit over PC-ism. I loved the book. I think it was great. I don't think it, applauded bad behavior. If anything, I think it goes even farther. You know, she could have let that be the end of her life and wreck her life. Instead, she took what she had and used that to propel her forward. And same thing with the commissioner. If anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, she was shot by the Joker and pretty much paralyzed, waist down.
Right. Really like spoilers, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was written by Alan Moore, I want to say. Illustrated by Brian Bolland.
Actually, just put a review up today on the website about that, for a historical precedence case of the few people on Earth that haven't read it, that are looking into all this. What is all this rage about all of a sudden? Because it's probably going to get another rage hit before the animated version of the movie comes out. They can check this and see what the deal is.
Well, I mean, it's Frank Miller and Alan Moore, I think, who modernized comics. Mm-hmm. That we really took a much more mature way of looking at comics. And just made it much more interesting and grounded, I think. And that's what the Killing Joke, I mean, it's much more of a serious Batman story instead of just being a silly Batman story.
It was really well written.
But it did create, I think, one of the more interesting characters in the DC universe, and that was Oracle. That's who Batgirl became, and now she's back to being Batgirl.
Yeah, because, New 52.
That's what Marvel and DC do, is reboot their universes.
Oh, Marvel doesn't do that. Oh, wait a minute. They claim they don't do that. Or they want to go with, it's a soft reboot. Just a minute.
But Secret Wars is not a soft reboot. It's taking the heavy-handed eraser and just going, let's erase that really hard.
Hard temporary reboot, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, when the next Avengers comes out, they'll change everything.
All right. Well, kind of recovered the flashback. How about we hop in to cover the Batman the Killing Joke while we look into a new segment.
Epic comic battle.
I went for the first one with Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars number 3, not the current Secret Wars, but the one from 1984.
All right.
And the reason why is it has a great, and this battle, I might add, only lasts, I think, like 3 pages, but it's with Spider-Man and he completely beats up the X-Men. I mean, he makes them look like rank amateurs. So just to get a little bit more detail in here, let's see. It starts on page, I believe, 9 or so in the book, maybe 10. And Spider-Man's looking over with, the X-Men have staked out their own private little headquarters rather than antisocial them. Because what happened is that, there was a good guy team, a bad guy team. Magneto was put on the good guy team, but he's an X-Men. And also there's Rogue on that team, which, if you know the Rogue history, not real good, like with Captain Marvel and all. If you're the regular heroes, you're probably going to want to beat her ass.
People weren't totally sure about the mutants back then. Are they good? Are they bad? We're not sure.
Right, which is, if you really think about it, quite funny, because we went from, you can't trust mutants because they're born with these powers, but yet they were okay with superheroes running all over the place.
Yeah.
But that's another story.
Yeah.
So anyway, Spider-Man's checking in on them because the X-Men ran off on their own. He says, boy, I'm still weird seeing Professor Xavier not in a wheelchair because he's no longer in it, and he sees the X-Men talking, on their own, and Spider-Man has enough of that. He hears enough that he thinks, okay, we better, you know, crash this party. And just as Professor X is saying, enough, the discussion is ended. Prepare yourselves. We go join Magneto. Wait, I sense an eavesdropper, Spider-Man, because once, you know, Spider-Man hears Magneto, he's like, oh, it's game time. Spider-Man doesn't pussyfoot through a knock on the door. He just busts through the freaking window and says, yeah, I heard what you guys are saying. Whap, it just bitch smacks Professor X, and I didn't like it, and I'm going to rat on you. And so he takes out Professor X right away. Wolverine takes a shot at him, misses. Spider-Man then webs Colossus right in the freaking face, flips over him. Storm is missing him. He webs up Rogue. Nightcrawler can't touch him. He webs up Nightcrawler and takes care of him while Wolverine's still missing him again. And Peter Parker, Spider-Man just bitch slaps Wolverine, just a swat. I mean, if you get taken out with SWAT, I mean, that's just amazing. He says, dummy, nobody can sneak up on me. These pig snickers may scare the barroom bullies, but to me, you're a joke. And then you see Nightcrawler on webs. He's like, his strength, his speed, unbelievable. He's awesome. I mean, he's got his boner for Spider-Man's potentially whooping their ass. Yeah. And then still, then finally Cyclops, which I don't know what he was doing this whole time, shoots and misses. And he's getting away. We hear that Nightcrawler yelling at Wolverine says, we're lucky that's all he was trying to do. He really clobbered us. He made us look like fools, like amateurs. When Cyclops is shooting him, he says, Spider-Man, wait, it's not what you think. I said, stop, mister. And Spider-Man says, and let you zap me with your concussion beam, Cyclops? Sure, see ya. So not only Spider-Man jump in, he beats the tar out of him with a few pages real quick and gets out and makes them all look like third-rate amateurs. Yeah. And this coming from Wolverine, even.
Right. It's way back when Spider-Man could kick butt.
Yeah, so I miss these days.
But it made me think there was a Spider-Man team-up where Spider-Man teams up with Nightcrawler. I wonder if that happens before or after Secret Wars.
I'd have to check them thing after. But you know what? It'd be amazing. This is not the only time Spider-Man whoops the X-Men. So who knows? I might have to use that as another the butt-kicking adventures later. I got a couple other ones lined up. But that is my view for the epic comic battle. Spider-Man going in and making the X-Men look like a bitch.
That is a really cool fight. Because you got me a number of copies of the Captain America. You know, as I'm a fan of the old Jack Kirby, you know, style, art style. One of the things he does with Captain America is there's a character called Batroc the Leaper.
Ah, yes.
And Batroc the Leaper seems just to be like Captain America's punching bag. And there's an awesome, if you look it up, you know, Captain America, Batroc the Leaper, Jack Kirby, there's a 9-panel page where Cap and Batroc fight in that page, and it's the most intense smackdown, but funnest smackdown I think I've seen in comics. It's just 9 pages, and you almost feel the blows. Like, you can tell there's a lot of power and energy behind it. You don't really see a lot of illustration like that today. You know, you might see somebody with a nice, the illustrations today are really nice and clean and perfect, which is fine, but I don't think they emphasize the impact the way Jack Kirby could really have somebody wallop on somebody.
You know, a great follow-up to that is if the second Captain America movie, when they put him in there and they were going to throw down, I was like, yes! That I was just roaring for that. I loved it.
Yeah, when he fought Batroc the Leaper.
Yes.
Guys, I don't know if he jumped around or not, but I know, Cap took him down, especially with the shield. It was like, clang, 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 bang.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a great book.
Yep.
Do you have anything else to add before we finish up?
I have nothing else for this week.
All right. Well, until next time, hopefully we'll still be here and surviving at the Henchman's Lounge. Until then, we'll check us out next time.
Talk to you later.